Good morning. Calling to order this meeting of the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee with my co-chair, Representative Dave Baker. I'm Representative Dave Pinto. Glad to be with everybody today. We've got a full agenda as usual. This is our last hearing before the budget bill week next week. More about that at the end of the hearing that all have comments. I would suspect that Chair Baker will as well. Members, first item of business is our minutes for the meeting yesterday. Chair Baker, you were the chair of that meeting. I wonder if you'd be willing to move approval of our minutes from April 2nd.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes from April 2nd.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Members, any additions or corrections to those minutes? I'm not hearing any, so all in favor of approval of the April 2nd minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes, and those minutes are approved. Members, Representative Gomez, Chair Gomez is here, and so we're going to pull her bill up from the bottom of our calendar, or towards the bottom. I guess it's got a couple more bills after that, and bring up House File 3079. I'm going to ask Vice Chair Greenman, if she can, to move House File 3079 to bring this bill before us.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Not seeing an amendment on this bill, so Chair Gomez, please present House File 3079, and welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thanks, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker and members of the committee for hearing this bill. So House File 3079 relates to an appropriation, a grant to the City of Minneapolis that was included in the 2023 tax bill. As you can see on line 1.9, the line that's being struck says, the grant must be paid by July 15th, 2023. So that was sort of our intent with this. Unfortunately, the contract between the City of Minneapolis and Deed wasn't executed until, or wasn't kind of finalized until June 2024. Looking to Ms. Topinka. So all this does is, that means that, you know, the work is kind of slated to be performed in a really kind of on a really compressed timeline. The money automatically it has to be kind of spent by June 30th, 2025, this June 30th. So all this does is extend that timeline out to June 30th, 2027 in recognition of the fact that it took a year plus for the kind of activities under the grant to start taking place. Katie Topinka, the IGR director with the City of Minneapolis, is with me. I'm happy to go into more detail, but that's kind of what the bill does. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez, Chair Gomez. And actually, I should have noted at the start of the meeting to members of the public, ordinarily we have paper copies of documents that are handed out to public, those folks in the room. There was, I think that the box somehow disappeared. I'm not exactly sure of the background on that. But in any case, documents are online, of course. Representative Schultz is looking at me with a quizzical look. I'm not, that's all I know, Representative Schultz. In any case, everything is available online, number one. But number two, I've been told if folks in the room, members of the public, specifically want a paper copy of something, they can flag the pages or staff and be happy to work to get that for you. We won't be able to do that, sort of make copies, hand out to everybody. Representative Schultz, there's something you want to ask about that? No, shaking your head. All right. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on House File 3079, first of all? Not seeing anybody, so we'll close that. And then members, questions or comments regarding this bill. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I kind of understand that Deed got out late. I guess I want to understand, either from the city or something, what caused the delay?
Yeah, I would move to Mr. Pinka, if you don't mind, Mr.
Sure.
Chair.
Sure, Mr. Pinka. If you can please identify yourself and then answer the question. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Katie Topinka, Director of Government Relations for the City of Minneapolis, and Chair Pinto, Chair Baker. It's kind of a combination of factors. There were there was a number of both Deed and then the city were dealing with a number of implementing new things coming out of the session, and so there was just quite a bit of back and forth between the city and the agency about the process for getting the money out in terms of whether or not there needed to be an RFP in selecting an entity, because the Graves Foundation was selected through an RFP process ultimately to implement the funds. So there was just quite a bit of back and forth about how the mechanism for needing to get the funds out the door, what what needed to be done on both the agency side, the city side, and then quite a bit of discussion about the eligible expenses. And we were also implementing two different direct appropriations at the same time. And so just the combination of all of those factors caused the delay.
Chair Baker.
Okay. Thank you. Again, I know we've heard from other folks, too, that we've had to make some adjustments. Laying out other dates, I think DEED was overwhelmed. I think for the most part, I think that they tried to deliver but could not. And I think at the end of the day, we have to now make more legislation, more room for them to do it. It's disappointing. I just want to say that on the record. It's disappointing that we have to do this. Chair Gomez, you have to do this as well. I think it's a failure of the department to kind of get things out when they say they could get it out, when they looked at us and said we'll get it out on time, and they didn't do it. And I think that goes around with a lot of other things that I've been frustrated about, but I just wanted to make sure. Thank you. I think this is not a bad thing, the project, but it's disappointing that we had to come back here and spend time today to do this. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Baker. And I know that we've heard a lot of frustrations about how long the process took, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Chair Gomez, I'm not sure if you want to say anything now. Okay, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gomez, my question for you would be, this specifically was to provide direct business support. You can find this in lines 1.15 through 1.17. And I'm just curious, did that support go out as directed by the statute?
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Schultz. So the money is getting out just on a delayed timeline. So they've, executed the contract between the City of Minneapolis and DEED. Minneapolis did an RFP to identify the entity that the money would flow through. That happened. And I think around, a million or so dollars, maybe a little bit more, has gone out now and has reached the community on the ground. But, the timeline is just slower than what we had anticipated and than what we'd intended. This allocation is really focused on the area of Lake Street that was the most impacted by the civil unrest in 2020 following the murder of George Floyd. Those businesses continue to experience impacts. The corridor itself, if you kind of drive through Central Lake Street, you'll see a lot of empty lots still. There's a lot of support that's needed. It's getting out, but we want to make sure that we're doing, the most impactful thing that we can with the money. And so I would prefer that they didn't have to, because they're kind of like, they're planning. They're like, if we need to spend it by June 30th, the need is there, and so we'll get it out. But the preference, and I think the most kind of thoughtful and impactful work could come if they had another, year or two to spend the money. So it's getting out, but there's more need there.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you sharing that, especially considering it sounds like not all the money has gone out. So I just hope that for the City of Minneapolis, that as you're evaluating the dollars that you will be able to spend after this is enacted, that you're ensuring that this is going to organizations and businesses that are still around. I'm concerned just from the fact that it's been several years that some of these that may have originally been either applicants or potentially receiving this might not exist anymore. So just want to make sure that we're not seeing any issues with those funds being allocated to people who are still seeking to do business in the area.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Chair Gomez, anything you want to say?
The organization that they're working in partnership with is called the Lake Street Council. They're sort of the business association for this area. There are just a lot of businesses that are in need, and so I certainly agree with you that this shouldn't be going to any entity that doesn't exist or is no longer doing business on Lake Street. But there's profound need in a number of different areas that organization's meeting for businesses right now. So there's no shortage of active businesses in need that were impacted by the civil unrest on Lake Street.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Looking to see any other questions or comments, members, and not seeing any. That may have been a bit of a summary, but anything else further you want to say, Chair Gomez?
I just appreciate the committee's time and consideration. Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker.
Thank you so much, Chair Gomez. Thanks to your testifier as well. With that, the chair lays over House File 3079 for possible future consideration. Thank you so much. And members, we're kind of bouncing around a bit here, so we're going to go, just because of some scheduling issues, going to House File 107, Representative Berg's bill. And so as she makes her way to the front, Representative Berg moves House File 107, bring that before the committee. I got to find that in my packet, and again to repeat, materials available online. No amendments, Representative Berg. And members, I should say, we're allocating, we'd spoken about 10 minutes for presentation on this bill. We'll have some time for testifiers, some time for discussion. This bill is going to be, is laid over. It's obviously a really important issue and one of interest to members, but just kind of want to set those scheduling parameters. Representative Berg, two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. To set the table for our discussion today, we first need to recognize that there is an all-out attack on workers happening in this country. From the complete dissolution of the collective bargaining agreement of the TSA, federal workers being stripped of the right to organize, or the dismantling of the NLRB, this administration has sent a clear message to working families in this country. You are not worthy of the rights and protections that should be, and to some degree have historically been, an inherent part of our society. When workers have a strong collective bargaining agreement, and when we provide them with a pathway to be fully human and successful in the workplace, we know that workers work harder, take even more pride in their work, remain loyal to their employer, and become the essential cornerstone of a thriving economy. As a proud rank-and-file dues-paying union member, I know that unions provide workers with a strong voice in the workplace. We know that unions set the standard for all workers when they negotiate fair wages and benefits and workplace safety standards. When workers come to the table to bargain in good faith, they expect the same in return. Employers maintain significant power over workers. One of the ways we see this demonstrated is when employers know that time is on their side if they can drag out negotiations with workers, particularly low-wage workers who would have an increased struggle to support their families if they were to go out on strike. We see this with seemingly unending bargaining on first contracts, like with some Starbucks workers. We see it in employers forcing workers into long, open-ended strikes in order to get workers to accept lower wages and benefits, which was the strategy used during the Writers Guild strike. Understand that a strike is always the last resort for workers trying to come to a resolution with their employer. In other words, workers are not going on strike in the same way that someone may choose to get a new job. They are forced out on strike by their employer's refusal to bargain a fair contract. House File 107 is nation-leading legislation that will grant striking workers the same access to their unemployment benefits as any other worker, which already includes locked-out workers. Like other workers, striking workers would need to observe the same non-payable week, which means that only those uncommon strikes lasting more than a week will result in any UI benefits being paid out. This bill would allow workers to get paid UI benefits on the second week, which is 1 week sooner than established legislation in other states like New York and New Jersey. Bear in mind that UI only provides partial wage replacement to merely soften the risk to workers' families, so this bill only goes so far in addressing the power imbalance between employers and workers, and strikes will continue to be used as a last resort. According to a report released by the North Star Institute, this proposal is estimated to cost the UI Trust Fund just 0.3%, which will be replenished through the established UI premium process, most directly affecting those employers who will see a higher experience rating from forcing their workers out on strike over unfair labor practices. This deterrent is yet one more way that this bill will help to level the playing field in bargaining. At this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Berg. So our first testifier, I believe, is Bernie Burnham. Please make your way up, and once you get settled in, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Bernie Burnham, and I am the president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the state's federation of more than 1,000 local unions who represent over 300,000 working people in every corner of our state in nearly every kind of job. On behalf of these workers, I'm here to speak in favor of House File 107. Our labor movement envisions a state where all working people have safe workplaces, a job that can sustain a family, time to spend with our families, and a dignified retirement. Both historically and to this day, workers taking collective action, including going on strike, has been the most effective way to move us closer to that vision. While strikes are often the most effective tactic for workers to win gains, a strike also carries the most risk. Federal labor laws are tilted in favor of employers, who also have economic leverage over workers and can stall negotiations, make threats, cut off health care, and permanently replace striking workers. Now, with a federal executive branch that clearly does not respect the rights of working people, employers have an even larger advantage than they already did. For example, when managers lock workers out, they aren't making a personal sacrifice. They don't lose a penny of pay or their health benefits. But when workers decide to go on strike, it often means no pay for workers and families for an uncertain amount of time. Mr. Chair and committee members, we can't change federal law here in St. Paul, but we can balance the scales for working Minnesotans by allowing workers to access unemployment insurance during a strike. Access to UI would not only keep food on the table for working families, but would also mean shorter strikes. When managers know that workers have a lifeline, they lose the incentive to what Disney CEO Bob Iger called during the last writers and actors strike, quote, starve them out before going back to the table. Mr. Chair and representatives, senators, let's continue making Minnesota the best state for workers by passing House File 107. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And I will call up Jay Chatlin. I'm not sure if I'm saying your name correctly. And I'll maybe ask Chris Rubesch to, I guess Chris is on Zoom. Okay, so then, yeah, please make your way on up. Once you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Jay Chatlin. I am president of the United Steelworkers Local 142B. Representative Burb, thank you for introducing this important legislation. In 2023, myself and my members were forced to go out on strike because of unsafe working conditions. My employer refused to implement safety measures to ensure safe working conditions for myself and my colleagues. The overall recordable rate in the foundry where I work was 14%, with some departments having an OSHA recordable rate as high as 98.98%. Before our contract expired, we diligently worked to enhance the safety culture within the foundry. However, our employer declined to implement necessary changes. When we started contract negotiations, we made it abundantly clear that safety was our top priority. Similar to many other employers, our company refused to bargain in good faith when it became evident the company was unwilling to add stronger safety language to the contract. My members faced a difficult decision, pay their bills or go on strike to protect themselves. Ultimately, we decided to go on strike, but it was a tough decision. Soon after we went out on strike, the company started using scare tactics. They told members insurance had been canceled long before it would actually expire, no different than the Hollywood executives in 23 during the Writers Guild strike, declaring we're going to starve them out until they're forced to sell their homes. Employees should never be forced to choose between paying their bills and working in an unsafe environment. This legislation would empower workers to strike for safer working conditions while ensuring their financial well-being. If this legislation were to become law, it wouldn't transfer power to the union. It would simply level the playing field. I support House File 107 and would ask all of you to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Turning to Chris Rubesch on Zoom, and Kim Lewis, I'll ask you to make your way to the front just as this testimony is going. But so our testifier on Zoom, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Co-Chair Pinto, Co-Chair Baker, members of the committee. My name is Chris Rubesch. I am a cardiac nurse and proudly serve as the president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. With the weather, I want to thank you all for the opportunity to testify virtually. Collective bargaining is one of the most important functions of a union. As a last resort in collective bargaining, workers sometimes make the incredibly difficult decision to withhold their labor and go on strike. This isn't a decision that any worker makes lightly, and it's not a decision that a union can force a member to make. In 2022, my wife, who's also an M&A nurse, and myself made the difficult decision to both go out on strike, seeking contract language that would improve the care we give to our patients. We were eventually able to reach a contract agreement, but that campaign highlighted the reality that so many of my coworkers face. Given the skyrocketing cost of higher education, groceries, childcare, and more, many workers today don't have the free right to exercise their ability to strike. In short, workers are being held hostage by a system that is stacked against them. Billionaire oligarchs are controlling more and more of every sector of our economy, and workers don't stand a chance in the face of those unbalanced forces. Extending unemployment insurance to striking workers would begin to level the playing field for Minnesota's workers. This law will give workers the economic liberty that every American deserves and show that Minnesota stands with we, the people, and not the corporate powers taking profits out of the state and even out of our country. Regardless of the party you belong to or what district you represent, please stand with me, my family, and my fellow workers, and support unemployment insurance for striking workers. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. As Kim Lewis begins, I'll ask Lauren Schotthorst to make your way to the front. Ms. Lewis, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to you.
Good morning, Chair Baker and members of the committee. My name is Kim Lewis, and this morning I'm speaking on behalf of school board members, school administrators, and school business officials across Minnesota. We appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns with House File 107, which would expand unemployment insurance eligibility to employees who voluntarily stop working due to a labor dispute. First, we'd like to say that we fully support the rights of workers to organize and advocate for fair working conditions. However, this bill would have the unintended consequence of encouraging and prolonging work stoppages, which can be harmful, particularly in education. Under current law, workers who choose to strike are not eligible for unemployment benefits during the work stoppage. That policy creates a natural balance in negotiations, both sides having something at stake. This bill would remove the balance by shifting the financial burden of a strike from the employees who initiate it onto the broader public through the unemployment insurance system. From an employer's perspective, this change would incentivize work stoppages by reducing the economic risks for employees who choose to walk out, prolong labor disputes, as access to unemployment benefits may reduce the urgency to return to the bargaining table, place an unfair cost on employers and taxpayers who would now help subsidize strikes. State law mandates instructional days. Requiring districts to make up strike days forces them to pay for 2 days of school to deliver one, creating an unfair, severe financial burden. And most importantly, in the case of school districts, this bill would have an adverse effect on student learning. Prolonged work stoppages disrupt instruction, delay academic progress, and disproportionately impact students who rely on school services the most. Strikes pull communities apart. In short, this bill weakens our ability to maintain consistent operations, undermines responsible labor negotiations, and puts student outcomes at risk. We urge you to maintain the current balance in the law and vote no on the proposal, and thank you very much for your time and consideration.
And thank you for your testimony. And as Lauren Schotthorst begins, I'll ask Hunter Cantrell to make your way to the front. Lauren Schotthorst, welcome, and please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I'm a policy director at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, a statewide business organization representing more than 6,300 businesses and more than 500,000 employees throughout Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to share our opposition to House File 107, legislation seeking to change existing unemployment law so that striking workers would no longer be ineligible for UI benefits during a labor dispute. Employers, not workers, in Minnesota subsidize the UI system. And when workers tap into the UI system, employers, not workers, are penalized through higher experience ratings and payroll taxes. This demonstrates the longstanding commitment of and the significant cost burden to Minnesota's business community in maintaining a safety net through UI over time. Current UI law is sufficient to address circumstances and allowances for certain workers that are striking to be eligible for UI benefits when appropriate. Deviating from this careful balance risks undermining the UI system's core no-fault principle and expanding the UI program without sufficient cost analysis risks the integrity of the program itself. Furthermore, as Deed shared earlier this session, benefit payments and broad-based usage of UI is increasing. putting so much recent pressure on our UI trust fund that last year, employers received a shocking payroll tax notice indicating an immediate double-digit increase in the base tax rate, plus an additional 5% assessment. Now is not the time to add unvetted UI costs and liabilities on Minnesota's employers. As it stands already, the cost of doing business in the city increased significantly as a result of the last biennium, and employers are very concerned about additional proposals that further impede their ability to succeed and grow in Minnesota. The Chamber believes that balanced unemployment-related policy benefits workers, employers, and taxpayers while enabling our economy to grow. It is for these reasons that the Chamber encourages members to oppose House File 107. Thank you for sharing this perspective with the committee as the committee considers this and other UI-related legislation this session.
And thank you for your testimony and for sharing it. Grace Baltich, you can make your way to the front. Hunter Cantrell, welcome to you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Co-Chair Baker. My name is Hunter Cantrell. I am a medical student at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here today to testify in strong support of House File 107, and I'd like to thank Representative Burke for all her hard work on this. We have long seen a complete power imbalance between workers and employers who benefit from their labor. Since the National Labor Relations Act was established, there has been a systematic erosion of workers' rights and their protections in the workplace. Wealthy corporations now hold monopolies over entire sectors of employment, and with growing illegal attacks on the FTC and the NLRB, these companies will assuredly use their increased anti-competitive economic power to further undermine pay, benefits, and working conditions for working people. Unfortunately, many large employers in our state have already a strong track record of intentionally stalling contract negotiations or retaliating against union workers while paying millions to big anti-union law firms to hinder bargaining efforts. Where in the past workers could file unfair labor practice charges to seek legal remedy for unfair employer bargaining behavior, a growing number of companies throughout Minnesota are now simply refusing to bargain in good faith, relying on the fact that a paralyzed NLRB will be powerless to hold them accountable. Some have said that should this measure to ensure workers have a modicum of financial stability, a mere average payment of 45% of their wages through UI, while they are forced out onto the picket line become law, costs will go up and enterprises will be harmed. But no one goes on strike lightly. When workers are forced out on strike, whether they are teachers or laborers or working in my industry of healthcare, it is a sign that employers are failing to address core issues of safety, burnout, and supportive working conditions. The easiest solution to assuage these fears from enterprises is to quite simply bargain in good faith with workers, strive to ensure their demands are met, and treat them with respect for the work that they do. While public employers are as reimbursement-based employers, may be concerned about increased costs associated with this bill. Having UI access for striking workers only affects budgets if workers are forced to access these benefits. This policy has the potential to lead to employers having greater incentive to reach acceptable contract settlements much more quickly rather than engage in intentionally prolonging bargaining. There is also the added benefit of this initiative helping to reduce turnover and subsequent needs for talent searches after strikes, especially in high burnout fields, which carries with it significant costs as well. This is an uncertain time for all working people who stand to be harmed by tariffs that will inevitably lead to job losses, unchecked corporate monopolies, and the rising cost of everyday essentials due to rampant price gouging. While corporate profits have grown exponentially in recent years, very little of that prosperity has reached the pocketbooks of working people who are integral to our economy. When more power is placed in the hands of workers, wages and quality of living always rise, and we all benefit as a society. In close, providing the lifeline of unemployment to workers forced to strike, which is money that will most certainly be immediately spent and recirculated in our local economies, is an essential guardrail to further secure economic stability and ensure fair employer labor practices while bargaining a contract. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you for being here. Grace Baltich, I ask you to make your way to the front. Once you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Grace Baltich. I am a senior social worker at Hennepin County and proud to serve as the president of my local there, AFSCME Local 34, and I also serve on AFSCME Council 5's executive board. I want to take a moment to thank you for hearing my testimony, and I want to thank Representative Berg for carrying this bill, authoring House File 107. This bill would greatly protect, as workers, our ability to be able to pay our rent, to be able to buy groceries for our children, to be able to keep our kids in childcare while we are in a labor dispute with our employers. As you've heard already today, strikes are a tactic of last resort, especially for those of us that work in the public sector. We are the people that do the work of Minnesota. We serve all of you. We make this state run. We pick up your garbage. We protect your children. We keep your lights on. We make sure that you're safe in the community. And we know that these are vital services. And we don't take it lightly when we have to, as a last resort, withhold our labor to make sure that we get a fair contract. And it's not just about wages. It is often about safety. For those of us in the public sector, we want to make sure that we have enough security on site, that we're not assaulted in the workplace. And that happens as social workers. We want to make sure that we have enough staff that we can go out in pairs when we do home visits, when we are visiting with residents that are a danger to themselves and or to the public, potentially. We want to make sure that we have safety committees that we can address our health and safety concerns in the workplace. And oftentimes, these are not things that the employer is just willing to do. And it comes to the decision, do we withhold our labor in order to do that?
I'll need to ask you to wrap up in
sure.
just a minute.
When I was a child and my dad went on strike, the only time that I had free lunch was when the principal said he would bend the rules and allow those of us that were children of the striking workers to be able to have free lunch. It is an economic hardship for us. So I encourage you to support House File 107. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for your testimony. Anybody else in the room who wishes to testify on the bill? I'm not seeing anybody. A close testimony then. And then members, questions, discussion. Folks have. Okay, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Burke, for carrying this bill. And I know you've been working on it for quite a while now. I'm wondering, just for clarification, is there something in your bill that changes the general terms of UI other than allowing striking workers to take it?
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for the question. No.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Thank you, Representative Burke. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That matters because if folks in this committee know how UI works, which is the first week, you can't collect it, so you're already out of paycheck, and then it's only a partial wage replacement up to half of your salaries. Most folks who are working, most of the folks we heard from, can't afford, even with unemployment insurance, to just get half a paycheck for very long. So I think, you know, we hear from the chamber and others a big story, but this is actually just a lifeline, and it's a lifeline that helps even the playing field. The other thing I'd say, as we think about rates of UI, there are actually other very costly things that are happening, like when we think about misclassification fraud. We heard testimony, $100, $200 million a year out of the UI trust fund. So when we think about protecting the trust fund, I hope our business community is as interested in that as it is in keeping workers from being able to have this lifeline that allows them a little bit of parity in the bargaining process.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Other member questions, discussion? Representative Johnson, then I'll go to Representative Frazier. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I was wondering if Ms. Schoenhorst from the chamber could come back up.
If she's willing to, Ms. Schoenhorst, on her way back up. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I guess a couple questions. Do you think that the concern of these, like you talked about, the increased costs for those employers that are paying back into the unemployment insurance trust fund and things like that, do you think that by allowing these striking workers to access that and that possible change to those employers would actually lead to a faster conclusion of some of these strikes, both benefiting the workers and those employers?
Ms. Schoenhorst.
The collection of UI for workers and the risk of increased payroll taxes on employers?
Representative Johnson, looks like you're being asked a clarifying question about your question.
Yeah, like that concern of those possible increased costs due to the striking workers, do you think that that would bring those people back to the table, both the workers and the employers, to try and come to a faster conclusion on some of these issues?
Ms. Shothorst.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, there's a combination of issues at any bargaining table. This would probably be one of them. I can't say for sure whether or not this would be a deciding factor in either case.
Representative Johnson, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. One other question. I was just wondering if you could weigh in on something that Representative Berg brought up about this idea of workers who are out on strike and the lack of pay and all those other things that they're feeling, and then the sentiment of some employers to just wait them out, to in essence starve out those employers, much like one of the testifiers talked about, and just kind of what the, if the chamber has a position on that.
Ms. Shothorst.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, my understanding is that workers on strike through a union have access to wage replacement through funds that the union collects on their behalf in certain instances. I'm sure that would be one factor in the totality of the discussions, and also that, again, one single factor doesn't lead anyone to one conclusion in a negotiation.
Representative Johnson, anything further?
I don't think so.
Okay. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Shothorst, you can, unless Representative Frazier has something for her.
We'll thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Shothorst.
Representative Berg, thank you for ringing this bell. Do you know what anniversary it is today?
Representative Berg.
No, but I have a feeling I should.
Representative Frazier?
Maybe. 57 years ago, Martin Luther King was in Memphis with the striking workers, sanitation workers. There. 57 years ago, he was fighting for the very thing that you're bringing this bill for, to give workers the ability to have dignity when they're fighting at the bargaining table, to protect themselves, to protect their families, and protect the community overall. 57 years ago, and we're still having this conversation about the importance of workers and why it's important to provide them with the tools they need to protect themselves, their families, and the communities that they serve. He gave a speech that night on April 3rd and said that he was not afraid to die and that he might not get there with his people, but he had seen that his people would get to the promised land. To not get too sentimental and philosophical, this bill is a tool to help workers get to the promised land. So thank you for bringing this bill during this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Looking for other member questions, comments? I'm not saying it. Before I send things back to Representative Berg, I'll just note, Representative Berg, you've been such a champion for workers. I know this particular proposal has been important to you and beyond that as well. And the theme that came out to me in so many of the comments, so much of the testimony in this bill, is about the power imbalance, in our society and in our country. And some of the references to corporate power and to, the monopolization that we're seeing in our society in so many ways. And so I really appreciate this. As a way to try to right that power imbalance on behalf of workers, which I know is a great passion of yours and a passion of so many of us as well. And so I really appreciate you advancing this. I'll let you share final thoughts on the bill before we take the final action. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier. I really don't feel like I can follow that, but I want to say that as we've had discussions in this committee, whether it's paid family medical leave or earned sick and safe time or this unemployment for striking workers, there's this sense that we're creating ways for workers to take advantage of their employers. And not only is that just unilaterally offensive, it's just simply not true. We would have to agree with the narrative that workers don't take pride in their work or don't want to provide for their family and build a life and legacy for that to be true. If workers were to go out on strike without unemployment insurance, not only do they lose their wages, but potentially they lose their health care. So now you're not bringing in your wages. You're possibly paying COBRA or rolling the dice and not having health care. And unemployment insurance is just a portion of your paycheck. It's barely going to get you by, but it is something. And as we heard from workers today, the ones that pick up your trash and keep your lights on, that take care of you or your loved ones, in dire need in a healthcare situation. Even our teachers, in 40 years, there have been four teacher strikes of any length. That's one a decade. We can do better for our workers. And so with this bill, we have the opportunity before us to set an example in how to support our workers when an employer is engaged in unfair labor practices, refusing to bargain in good faith, refusal to comply with safety standards on the job site, or otherwise abusing workers. Minnesota is a labor state. From the mines on the Iron Range to the meatpacking plants in Worthington, the refineries in the metro to our schools, hospitals, grocery stores, nursing homes, from PCAs to security guards, workers live and provide invaluable services in each and every one of our districts. A vote against this bill is a vote against workers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Thanks for your work. Members and members of the public, we know that this bill, that any bill at this point in session requires support from both DFL members and GOP members as well. And I know from conversations that this bill does not have that support. I'm going to lay it over at this time, but certainly hope that as we continue to have conversations, this is something that we can do to try to rectify the power imbalances in our society. So at this point, the chair lays over House File 107 with great thanks for Representative Berg and for the folks who brought it before us. So now back to the top of our agenda. I'm Representative Johnson. We're having you go to the front. And Representative Johnson moves House File 3023 for moves to refer this bill to Ways and Means. Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair, I think, are we doing 2378 or 3078 or 3023?
Well, I was going to go to 3023. I know that you've got a testifier on 3078 who will need to leave after not too long. Were you thinking, Representative Johnson, you'd rather do 3078 first then because of that reason? It's in we've got 30. We'll do 3023, I suppose, and then we'll hope that we can. Let's see here. Just look, think about the timing for your testifier. Your testifier needs to log off. Why don't we do 3078 then, just to be absolutely sure that we can get your testifier in. So, pardon, and my apologies to members of the public and all. However, one thing I tell members of the public: we apparently, Representative Schultz, the documents public have been found. So good news. So there's some in the ante room there, and so if folks want to get those, you're certainly welcome to. So Representative Johnson removes his motion about the other bill and now moves House File 3078 for re-referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Johnson, please describe House File 3078.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present House File 3078. This bill does I would like to move the A1 amendment, if that's possible.
Certainly, yes. Why don't you just describe the A1 amendment?
The A1 amendment just expands on which workers would be eligible for a 13-week unemployment extension.
Okay. Members, questions, discussions all about the A1 amendment? Not seeing any. All in favor of approval of the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wishes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes, so the bill is in the form you wish. To House File 3078 as amended, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone, for giving me the opportunity to present House File 3078 as amended. This bill does two things. First, it makes workers who took deferred resignation between January 27th and February 13th of 2025 eligible for unemployment insurance extension. And additionally, the amendment makes federal workers who lost their jobs eligible for an additional 13 weeks of unemployment after their federal unemployment compensation runs out. With the significant and sudden number of newly unemployed and potentially unemployed workers resulting from federal layoffs, we need to face the reality that these impacts will have on the workers, their families, and our communities. These workers include folks from the Environmental Protection Agency, letter carriers and postal workers, researchers from the National Institute of Health, those serving our veterans at the VA, rangers in our national parks, as well as workers at the FDA, the FAA, the USDA, the SSA, and the DOD. First, to address the original part of the bill and the folks that took that deferred resignation from the fork in the road email. This email included major changes in working conditions, which included things like returning to the office 5 days a week and added that consolidation could potentially result in physical office relocations, drastically changing what that looks like for those workers. This includes folks who are contracted to work remotely, like medical professionals at the VA who treat patients via telehealth, being told to return to an office that they never had in the first place to work in a cubicle, much like we have at the Centennial Office Building, vastly changing the privacy and the ability to do the work and have the conversations they need to have with their patients. This letter also included threats that they were likely to be downsized through restructuring or reductions in force, which include furloughs and reclassifying workers to be at-will employees, as well as it went on to say that workers that stay will be subject to enhanced standards of suitability and conduct without any definition of what that was. This created an environment of uncertainty and fear that led to some of those workers to feel like they had no other option to leave. The amendment offers a 13-week extension to federal workers who lost or will lose their jobs in the coming months. Like the miners that we were talk about later and that we talked about yesterday, many of these folks have unique skill sets and may need a little bit more time to find suitable and comparable work. With that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Jacob Romans, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 3669, here to testify about some of those impacts.
And please identify yourself to our testifier on Zoom and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good morning for having me. My name is Jacob Romans, president of AFGE Local 3669 out of the Minneapolis VA.
And please proceed.
Okay. So when we heard about the RIF of federal employees, that's the reduction in force, we did not know who would be affected. Several weeks later, we still do not know. Doctors, nurses, social workers, and many other frontline staff are not safe from these layoffs. 30% of VA employees are veterans themselves. In fact, one of the first people who was unlawfully fired was a 100% disabled veteran. Many of us have spent our careers serving the public, particularly veterans. Federal employees make on average 25% less than the private sector. We did not get into this line of work for the money, but our mission of serving those who served. Russell Vogt, Director of Office of Management and Budget, stated explicitly that the goal was to traumatize federal employees. This is exactly what is happening. People are rightfully upset, worried, and ready to organize against this attack on us. In fact, veterans and employees came out in droves last week during our rally outside the VA. There are only 18,000 federal employees who work in Minnesota. This is roughly 0.003% of the population. If cost is an issue, please consider the relatively small amount of people this would need to pay out, and voting down this bill will inevitably hurt veterans who have been terminated. This bill will alleviate some of the burden that employment may have on laid-off federal employees. Voting against this bill is voting against the employees who serve our veterans and the veterans themselves. You vote against employees, but once you vote against veterans, you will have a very angry and high propensity constituency against you. Please support House Bill 3078. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Romans, and thank you for your service as a federal worker. And I want to be careful about speaking for everybody in the committee, but I'll just say that it's so disheartening as to how you all have been treated, and we really are grateful to you for your service. Anybody else in the room who wishes to testify on the bill? Not seeing any, we'll close testimony then and move to member questions and discussion. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I guess I really don't understand this question. This might be nonpartisan. Federal employees is what you're trying to get to here with this to get Minnesota unemployment insurance. Do they pay Minnesota uninsurance premium, federal government, to the Minnesota fund?
Representative Johnson, if you know, or else we can direct that nonpartisan. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take a crack at it. My understanding is they pay into the federal system. They do not pay into the Minnesota one, so this would be a hit on our unemployment insurance trust.
Chair Baker, back to you.
That's what I understood as well, and again, unless I'm corrected, but that seems like a double whammy on our end. So they don't pay into our account like everybody else does in Minnesota, but yet this will tee it up, and they'll actually drain the system faster than anything because there's no income coming from those positions. I know This is a challenging discussion. I get that there's a lot of folks that have a lot of heartburn, but they are under a different system than we are. And that's why I'm having a hard time kind of supporting the concept of this. Not because when people are forced to resign, this is not a, and I think I want to be clear also, Representative Johnson, maybe a question, this is not also about taking early retirement. Is that correct?
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Chair. This would not about be taking the early in retirement. This would be more that deferred resignation. So those folks are still probably actively looking for jobs, and my understanding it's a probably small number of people.
Chair Baker?
Thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chair. Just I want to be clear about that, too, because sometimes those get missed up, mixed up. So, again, I'm concerned about the math, how this works. It'll be, again, a major hit on our system that was never designed to do this. So unless we change federal law, or to get them to start, you know, I think being part of our system here that protects our workers, these federal employees are, yes, they're citizens and they're residents of Minnesota. We just, though, in this case, I think have a very hard time and a challenging time to make this up when they're not contributing to the system already. So it isn't just as simple as this. So I just want to make sure that's one of my main concerns of this, is that this has not been baked through well enough. I need to have a lot more discussion about this. And so, you know, I can't support it at this time to move it on, but this is a, it's a discussion that we should continue to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Baker. I'll go to Representative Johnson. Do you want to say something now or else I'll go to another? Okay, so Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for bringing this bill. And I agree with Representative Baker that what this bill does is require the state of Minnesota to pick up some of the weight that is left behind what's happening at the federal level. I just don't know how we avoid that. We can't control what the federal government does. There are, of the 18,000 federal workers, 8,702 of them work at the VA, work for the VA. Many of them are in my district. Many of them are probably also in your districts who work for the EPA, the TSA, the National Park Service, the USDA, I could go on and on, I won't. But those are Minnesotans. Those are folks who live here, they send their kids to school here, they participate in our economy, and when they are laid off because of this sudden, unforeseen action, many of these folks, some of them have been working for a couple years for the federal government, some of them have been working for 10 or 20 years, didn't expect this, didn't have their resume together. And so, yes, I think that the question we're asking is what and how can Minnesota step up for these workers who are in a position because of no fault of their own, no fault of the state of Minnesota, but we have an obligation to these workers and their families and the people they serve. And so I think that that is a very real obligation we have that the federal government probably won't pay us back for. But the best thing they could do is not lay off these workers who are serving Minnesotans. So I guess the other thing I just want to say, and I really appreciate this bill, I really appreciate Jacob and all of the workers at our that are just navigating through this, because when we talk about our federal workers, we are talking about, you probably have heard from them, I have heard a lot from the federal workers in my district who don't actually know if they're laid off or fired yet. And part of the reason for this bill, like other extensions of unemployment insurance that we've talked about, is that if people find another job, great, they won't take UI. That's the goal. Nobody wants to be on unemployment insurance. It's a partial wage replacement. People would rather be working. They also, their bottom line would rather be working. But if you are in a position where you are laid off through no fault of your own and you can't find another job, what this says is we're going to get you through the holidays. We're going to give you that extra time to get your resume together so that you can find another job, whether it's a data scientist, whether it's someone working in our parks, because I don't know how much our economy can absorb park rangers, TSA agents, data scientists, benefits managers for the VA. I hope that what happens is these folks get brought back in, because I know our veterans are waiting long, long times for their benefits, and part of that is because there are not enough people working at the VA for those VA benefits. 80,000 cuts to the VA means people are going to, it's going to take a long time to get their benefits. And I'm sorry for taking a little bit of time. I hear about this every day from my constituents. and it's hurting people. And so we can't solve all the problems, but we can help these workers. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for doing this. I think that there is a question. There's work to do here, but our workers don't have time. And so sending this on to Ways and Means means we can continue doing the work. We can figure out how to pay for it. The UI Trust Fund, I think we're not probably talking about that many workers, but they can't wait for us. So I hope that folks vote green, and I really appreciate this bill, Representative Johnson.
Mr.
Chair. Chair Baker, yeah, back to you.
Thank you. Just as a follow-up here, too, again, when Representative Greenman says that, no fault of your own. I get that. Understand that if there's layoffs, this is not the first time the federal government has laid off people, or it's the first time they haven't had some of these adjustments, or even in the past just terminated bad employees. And we've never had it at the table at this point to do unemployment for bad employees. But I don't think your bill addresses that specifically. So I just want to make sure that, again, there's a lot to this. I want to make sure that this isn't just kind of a full sweep. The federal government for years has had changes in their system and their payroll benefits, and this hasn't been one of them that the Minnesota residents and taxpayers have had to pay on their own. So I want to say there's more to this than just full sweep of the unemployment insurance for people that are laid off in the federal government. So thank you.
Jerry, I was going to say something in response to that, but I think Representative Greenman, I think, may want to, so I'll send it back to her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker, and I appreciate that. But these are not layoffs that are coming because of congressional cuts from or downsizing that have months and months and many times years of leeway. These are folks who thought they had a job on January 21st, and then we're told, sent an email that they sometimes didn't get because it was sent to an email of their work that was shut off, whether they could come back on, whether they could come back off. I mean, just talk to these workers. Some of them don't know if they have a job today. So this is, again, this is a, if you look at the bill, both of these, they're very time delimited, right? This is not about what Congress, the budget passes. This is not about the $1.6 billion in Medicaid cuts, which we're going to have to figure out how to solve in another committee. This is about the shock of folks, not only through no fault of their own, but I don't think any of us anticipated that. So people didn't start having their resume cleaned. And this is why I think when we talk about that, we don't do extended benefits in very many cases. But when we are thinking about entire industries that have been rocked unexpectedly and workers have not had any role in that and in many cases haven't been able to prepare for it, that's what we're talking about here. Again, we're going to have a long time to talk about how we're going to deal with some of the federal cuts that are coming through Congress and everything else. We've done that before. This is a pretty unique situation, and that's, I think, why we need this bill.
Other things, Member? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, a testifier said that there were 18,000 federal employees. What number of federal employees took the deferred resignation that was available between January 27th and February 13th.
I will note the federal government has not been particularly transparent in the last since the Trump administration started. So, but anyway, Representative Johnson, I mean, you may have an answer to that.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. We don't know that number yet. Doing a little bit of digging around, trying to figure what it is. We know what the national number possibly looks like, but we don't know what that impact here is in Minnesota. Also, we don't know how many of those folks have other jobs or will have other jobs by the time they'd be eligible for something like this.
Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly we want to be operating from some facts and actual data, right? We've talked about the workers on the Iron Range. We actually have a target on that, somewhere between 550 and 600 approximately. If you use the exact numbers from yesterday, it was closer to 550. So when you're looking at your amendment that you added to this, how many people would fit within that additional amendment?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Again, it's a rolling target. We don't know where, and to Representative Greenman's point, like some of these folks don't know if they are, if they're not employed, they don't know what that future looks like, but this creates a window for those people that are impacted like that. Who are suddenly found without work to collect those benefits for 26 weeks from the federal government, which they do pay into, and then be eligible for a 13-week extension should they need it to find that landing spot.
Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, Governor Walz has been very forward in saying that he wants to hire as many federal workers as are removed from the federal workforce. How many jobs are available for Minnesotans today, specifically by the state of Minnesota?
If you have that information, Representative Johnson?
I don't have that information directly in front of me. I know with a lot of the discussions that we're having in all of our committees with the way the budget looks, there seems to be a lot of pushback on filling any vacant positions and reducing positions that we do have. So I don't know what that number actually looks like.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I mention this is because it doesn't matter whether we're talking about our areas of jurisdiction or the others across state agencies. We have seen that Minnesota state government agencies for the last 4 years have had massive unfilled positions. And frankly, you know, if we don't make changes to the bills that, you know, our side of the aisle has certainly talked about this session, there's hundreds of jobs that are going to be available later this year from the state of Minnesota. And so why are we seeking to spend this time when there's all these government jobs that are available trying to beef up unemployment rather than, you know, our state agencies working to hire some people for the budgets that we have already allocated?
Thank you, Representative Schultz. I'm not saying other things. I'll know before I'll send it back to you for last word, Representative Johnson. I suppose, Representative Schultz, that's a reason to think that this would be significantly less costly. We just do want to make sure those federal workers who have been treated so horribly by the Trump administration at least have the support that they need. I just had a quick technical question, though. There's a comment earlier about these federal workers, somehow things not being paid for. My understanding, and maybe I'll ask if our House research can confirm this, that the regular 26 weeks for federal workers get reimbursed by the federal government to us. So that's the same cost to the UI Trust Fund as any other worker. The extension in this bill would not be paid for in the same way that the extension for minors that I know we all support is not paid for. But we're believing that those of us who'd be voting in favor of this would believe that that's worth it. But in that way, the two situations, that there's some equivalence. Can you just comment, Micheline, just help me understand the technical part of that?
Chair and members, Anna Schleen, I believe that is correct, but I am not an expert on UI. I could maybe do some research later and get back to you.
Okay, thank you. My understanding is that, and so in that way, I guess that wouldn't be a reason to vote against this, to my mind, because it's the same situation as for extension for workers. And final thing before I send things back to Representative Johnson, I just want to note, while it's true, Chair Baker, that there have certainly been layoffs in federal government, et cetera, I do think we can all agree what is happening right now is unprecedented. And it really is the case that workers are being asked to send every week this message to this Musk email inbox that says, you know, the five things they worked on. My understanding is very often that box is full. Nobody gets back to them. I mean, things are a real mess in our federal government at this point. And this is a very different situation than the past. And these federal workers have been treated horribly. And those that are in Minnesota, when they no longer have employment in Minnesota because of this situation, we want to make sure that they can land on their feet and continue to be thriving in our state. So Representative Johnson, final. Representative Schultz. Okay, a little bit unusual. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. I just note for the record that each legislator sends legislative updates on a weekly basis. I checked yours, Mr. Chair. You sent an update on what you've been up to every week for the last month, so I can't understand why any employee can't do the same.
Actually, thank you. I actually have not sent it every – I have not sent it every week, I will say. I'm pretty pretty spotty about that. But in any case, good to know. We can encourage them to do the same, I suppose. Representative Johnson, to your bill, final words.
Thank you, Chair and members. I just want to address a couple things that were said. To your point, Chair Baker, you know, you talked about, I think you mentioned something about bad employees or employees that lose their job for cause. This wouldn't impact those. Folks that would not be eligible under Minnesota's current guidelines are folks who have continued unexcused absences or tardiness, use of drugs or alcohol on the job, breaking company rules, intentional neglect of duties, insubordination, theft, fighting, harassment, et cetera. My understanding is that those folks, if that's why they lost their job, they would not be eligible because it would be with cause. And to another piece of that flow of federal workers at the federal level, as somebody who's experienced ups and downs of budgets and the reduction in workforce in the city that I work in, a lot of times those positions are able to be absorbed through attrition where nobody is losing their jobs, they're just not refilling jobs after folks retire. we shouldn't make what is happening right now is not normal. This is not normal for our workers. This is not normal for our country to have it be so chaotic at that level, and it is truly impacting people's lives. And to Representative Greenman's point, I've talked to a number of workers who don't know what is happening or what they're going to be doing. They are in one of these workforces where they are saying they're going to eliminate 80,000 jobs across the country, and they don't know if that's their job or not. So these are very real fears that are impacting folks in our communities. So just to close this out, the rush of these unemployed or possibly unemployed or future unemployed workers in our communities will be very difficult to absorb. Many of these jobs are very specific skills that may not be easily transferable to another job. These workers, including a significant number of veterans, are people that we want to keep in our communities. Post file 3078 gives them a little bit longer runway, ensuring they have every possible opportunity to land on their feet and continue to contribute to the places they call home. Thank you for your support on House File 3078.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman.
Mr. Chair, could we have a roll call, please?
Okay, that's been requested. There will be a roll call. So, members, Representative Johnson renews his motion that House File 3078, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Aye.
Chair Baker.
No.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mecklen.
No.
Representative Bakenberg.
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Frazier?
Yes.
Representative Hussein?
Yes.
Representative Pete Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Wayne Johnson?
No.
Representative Kozlowski?
Yes.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Representative Zelezdikar?
The vote is 7 in favor, 7 opposed, and because of that, the motion fails. Representative Johnson, thank you for your work. We are going to bring up a bill to extend unemployment insurance benefits to a group of workers, House File 3023. Representative Johnson moves that bill to re-refer it to the General Register. To re-refer it to Ways and Means. And so, Representative Johnson, please, to your bill. I will note that we're getting a little bit tight on time. We, of course, heard a version of this yesterday. But, Representative Johnson, if you can briefly describe House File 3023.
Thank you, Chair. I'll have my two testifiers start working their way up as I introduce this so we
can thank you.
Speed it up. Obviously, we had a good discussion on this topic yesterday morning. Representatives Igel and Warwas did a great job of speaking to this and why this unemployment insurance extension is needed and the positive impacts that it'll have on those communities. I firmly believe the best path forward for this bill is to stand on its own, free from the risk of being weighed down by any additional provisions. With that, I have two testifiers that can speak to this bill, John Arbogast of the United Steelworkers District 11 and Al King, President of Steelworkers Local 6115.
Thank you. Yeah, and come on up to the chairs. Representative Johnson, I understand that there was a technical oral amendment that you wanted to make and that has the support of the trades. Maybe you can just bring this up. We'll see if that ends up being something that can even be done. Representative Greenman, you have this thing to share. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have the line edit. On page 1, line 10, this was an amendment that Representative Igo made yesterday, deleting 50 and inserting 40. I think it further aligns the bill, UI extension benefits, which I think we all agreed with, and I think that's coming from our partners in the trade. So
okay.
I think Representative Schultz has something to say
about Representative it. Representative Schultz, to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just note for the record here quickly, this is what happens when you're not working together with the people who this impacts and their districts and their members. This was an amendment that I brought yesterday because Representative Igo is not a member of the committee. This bill in its current form doesn't suit what suits the Iron Range best, as was given by the testifiers yesterday. And this amendment doesn't achieve the goal that was stated by the testifiers. And so this bill is different from what we saw, and not working in a positive, collaborative fashion to get a bill that can achieve all of the votes needed to get this done this session for the future of the Iron Range. And so I'm concerned with this, and I think that, you know, it deserves its day in the sun.
Your concern is noted. Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll note that this amendment was asked for by the same folks who I think probably worked with Representative Igo to amend it. I think we'll hear from them. But this, what this does is ensure that those folks who yesterday we all agreed we want to ensure get the unemployment benefits extension actually do. If you vote no on this amendment, it may mean that we are excluding the very people who are asking us for that. So that's why it's an oral amendment, to bring it in line with the piece of the bill that there's support to move forward for. So I'd ask for
So I guess I'm yes, it's just so that's the same thing as yesterday, just having an amendment that is doing the same thing, I guess. But Chair Baker, thoughts on this? I mean, what I'd like to do is say we have the bill in the form the author wishes by just making that change. But Chair Baker, thoughts on that?
Well, no, again, I appreciate the conversation. This is why you work together. This should have been caught. We caught it yesterday when we had this discussion. It's an important part of it. But again, I think what we're trying to get to is a long-range plan for our workers on the range to make sure this works. I mean, again, this is an important piece of that. I don't know that we have an issue that we want to hurt that, because, again, we do want to make sure that we help our miners, but we've got to figure out a long-range plan so we have an iron range down the road. So, again, accepting this in this manner is a shabby way of doing it around here, but I know what happens. But this is – we just spent an hour on it yesterday in my committee. And we should have done it then, and then we didn't. And so I'm disappointed in how this is being done.
Yeah, Representative Johnson, comments do you have to this?
Chair, I'd be happy to take the amendment to make sure that we're including all the workers that need to be included in this.
Okay.
Chair,
Representative Schultz.
Yep, one other thing for the record. We actually have an amendment that meets the needs of all. It's the DE1. So we could take that up. It would actually get the bill in the form that the advocates are asking for. That's on our agenda. This current amendment doesn't achieve the goals of the testifiers.
Certainly my plan was to take up the DE1. I thought we would hear from the testifiers first before doing that was my plan. But I'm wondering if we can get Representative Johnson's bill just in the shape that he and the folks testifying with him wish. So to just the proposal is to change line 1.10 from 50 to 40 to at least have that happen. So that way it'll at least be in the form that the folks who are here are wanting. So what I'd like to do then is if we can just have that happen. So the motion is to change line 1.10 from 50 to 40. So folks in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. So thank you so much. That motion passes. We've got that change. We'll go to the testifiers, and then we will take up the D, assuming that that's okay with folks who have that. So John Arbogast, you're first. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. John Arbogast, International Staff Rep for the United Steelworkers. I represent the six mines in northern Minnesota and all the workers. Thank you for having me back today. I took a punch yesterday. The steelworkers took a punch. But what do we do when we get knocked down? We stand up and fight back. And things, you know, we're not happy about what happened. But as of Monday, we're already back to work on Spencer's 2 and 3. I think everybody, what we learned yesterday, you heard from us testifying, we're headed back towards 1981 on the Iron Range, where we lost all those workers, and it's that dire, and we'll figure these things out. I want to thank you all. I know you care about the Iron Range. You care about my members, and I guess we'll go a different path, but we'll get it figured out, because it is dire. It's different this time. It's not the cyclical stuff. The Iron Range is changing. We're pellet heavy. Last night I was laughing. I was laying in my hotel bed, and I thought about two of my mentors, Tommy Rukavina and David Tomasoni. I could hear their voices. Boy, you screwed this up, kid, even though I'm not a kid anymore. That's the kid. But, a lot of you worked with those two. And when I was 1938 Mid-Tech's president, we had windows, and all of a sudden Tommy would pull up, and I go, oh, Christ, what did I do wrong now? Well, his voice was ringing in my head last night. But the first and most important thing is we've got to bridge this gap, and we got to fix the Iron Range, because it's, you know, the unemployment, we don't want people to move. families, children, everything like that. So we're going to get to work next week. The administration's already reached out to me, and we're going to fix. I mean, 15 years have been coming down here testifying on sulfate and precious metals. My members, they're ruthless. They call me Uncle Ben. That's how long I've been testifying on wild rice. But we are going to fix it because we have to. We have to do site-specific. We have to do precious metals, and we'll get there. They're both controversial, but we'll figure it out as a state. And what I'm taking back to the range today is I got a good feeling that everybody on this committee understands where we're at, where we're headed, and how desperate we are. So thank you, and appreciate you having me back 2 days in a row.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. And, yeah, you are very persuasive, Uncle Ben. Glad to have you here as I'm telling you that. Al King, welcome, and please identify yourself. Proceed with your testimony.
I'm Al King, president of Local 6115 at Minorca. I'm somewhat speaking in behalf of President Johnson with him on this, and that's why I appreciate the amendment. We caught it right away because this would not cover his members. And my cousin works there. We're a family up there, and that's why we're here today. I don't believe I have to go into what I said yesterday for this committee. You all heard the testimony from my aunt and from our everyone else that was able to kind of paint that picture for you what's going on here. This unemployment is important, and I want to thank Representative Johnson. We had a long conversation yesterday, and I want to thank all of you for listening to us testify yesterday, because we are in an unprecedented scenario up there. This unemployment would give my members hope to hang on through the winter, but on the other side of that winter is what I'm concerned about. And this is more than just the 300 members that I represent. This is now turning into the broader Iron Range, and this is where I grew up. This is where I live. That's where I grew up on wild rice, and this is important to me and my members. I'm now there's faces to all of these things that we're talking about, and I can facilitate any meeting you would like to have to see these people that are affected by decisions made in this committee and likewise other committees. The future of mining, the future of iron ore, the future of our Iron Range is in this committee's hands and other committees' hands. It's in this legislator. It finally lands in the governor's hands at the end of this, because we don't have the time anymore. We are out of time, as that was testified yesterday. And so the future of the Iron Range that bleeds into every aspect of this state is in this legislative body's hands this year. And I beg of you to take that into consideration. I thank you for your time, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for coming back again, to both of you. Really, really appreciate it. I'm going to see, is there anybody else in the member of the public who wishes to testify on the bill, first of all? Not seeing any, so we will close that up. We'll go to member questions, and then a second we'll go to the amendment as well. But are there questions anybody wants to ask before we move to that? I'm not seeing. Chair Baker, we'll go
just
to
a comment. Thank you again. Yes, gentlemen, thank you again for coming back. I'm sorry you had to do this. I think that what we're seeing here, again, kind of play out, unfortunately, is the ability for some members really on the range that need to start working closer together too. I think Representative Johnson is going to be a good representative. He's new. He's learning the ropes. I get it. I understand. I've been there. Spencer, Representative Igo, knows more levers and knows the thing here, the pathway to get a longer-term fix. And I just encourage this example of how we need to start working together bipartisanly, faster and more or efficiently, so that you don't have to come back for a couple different days and hear the same bill. This is how the process so just needs to work. Again, this is an important issue. We need to figure out how to keep moving through this, but I just know how hard Representative Igo worked on getting this right, because he spent every minute the last 3, 4, 5 days talking to those members. And I know, Representative Johnson, you probably have done some of that too, but take advantage of the members that know some of those too, just a reminder for all of us. So I just want to say that before we move on to the DE. Thank you.
And thank you, Chair Baker. Representative Berg has something she wants to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this bill. Process matters. And kind of in response to Chair Baker's remarks, yes, Representative Igo does know how the process works. And the process, the way he brought it forward, was not the correct process. I have, Spencer and I came in together. We actually have a really good relationship because I know that he cares about the workers. That will never be a question in my mind. And when I talked to him about this bill, I urged him to go through the right process. We have some time to talk about Articles 2 and 3, and we will, President Arbogast, we will. We'll talk about that in the proper committee. Right now, we want to make sure we get your workers, your family, the benefits that they deserve, and we will have that longer-term conversation because all of us do care about the range. We care about the workers on the range, and we care about our wild rice and our tribes, all of it. It's not a mutually exclusive conversation. We want to do it right. We want to be careful because when we do the full process of a bill, then it matters. It has teeth. It has success. And that's what we want here is success. And the other thing I want to say is those of us sitting in this part of the room need to stop talking like you all are not in the room. You are here sharing your story and your expertise. We work for you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. The DE1 amendment, who will be offering that? Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for this bill, and thank you to the steelworkers and for you all coming back today. And I think it's a unified message. We heard this yesterday. We all agree in this room that unemployment is something that needs to happen, and it needs to happen fast, and it needs to get taken care of. The issue I think that's before us is there were 6 pages to the bill yesterday, 6 really important pages. The first 3 are unemployment. We all agree in this room on unemployment. That's clear. The piece that's the bridge that is critical are the last 3 pages that were introduced yesterday. When you listen to the testimony from the steelworkers, 15 years people have been coming down here for process. 15 years. I mean, 15 years. We have been listening. It's time to lead. The bridge was put out yesterday to say, you know what? The clock is done. It's time to lead. And the issues on the Iron Range that we're hearing right now are very reminiscent of the days of decades ago in Duluth. The 80s aren't that far away. I graduated in the 80s when there were no jobs. But I'll tell you what, from the 1990s to 1980, Duluth was the home of U.S. Steel's Duluth Works that borders the exact district that Representative Johnson and I both share. That was in Morgan Park. And I cared for many of those people in the nursing homes. It was the pride of the North. And it was in Duluth. Fort was there, and we had the Iron Range. And the Star and Tribune wrote just 2 years ago, in December of 23, why did Duluth economy collapse in the 80s? You might want to read it. It's in the Star and Tribune just 2 years ago. They stated right specifically at that time it was regulatory uncertainty. It was the issues with MPCA. It shuttered the facility. And for over 4 decades now, Duluth has faced stagnant growth that was once a booming, thriving steelworker community in Duluth and the range. That's fact. West Duluth was never the same. Duluth was never the same. And every surrounding business and every surrounding community on that region, to the Grand Marais, to Ely, was affected. To think that it wasn't. And back then, in just the 80s, Duluth lost 1,200 steelworker jobs. We have the same thing happening now in the Iron Range with 600 jobs that will have the exact same decimating effect. And so to listen is honorable. But when a process can't get done in 15 years, the Hail Mary went out yesterday because that's where the range is at. So let's talk fact. Let's talk truth because that's what's happening to northern Minnesota's economy. It's been decimated. Decimated. And it affects, I'm getting calls by everybody. Yes, the employment's great. We need the bridge. And you are the reason the bridge needs to happen. Your vote matters to support the North as much as you're supporting Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Metro. And like I said yesterday, make no doubt about it, the school trust fund, that the funds that come from the mining are instrumental for schools. St. Paul School District gets $2 million from the mines right now. Minneapolis gets $1 million from the mining. Imagine what would happen if mining took off in the North for the green energy to do all the things we have right here on our desk to take care of it. We have it all in our backyard, and we're saying no. And can you imagine what the schools could have if mining took off in the state of Minnesota, when every school district right now has millions in layoffs, when we had an $18.5 billion surplus just 2 years ago? Mining has been our past. Mining is our is what we need for our future. Mining led the way in World War II. I took care of all those World War II veterans that were, every one of them worked in the mines. And their wives and their families were in businesses supporting the mines. It's not any different. When the mines close, so does the spouse leaves the hospital working. The doctors, we have issues then with two mecca hospitals that were just built in Duluth, Ascension and St. Luke's. They will lose a lot of their workforce too. Because when the families leave the range, it affects every business. It'll affect our health care. It'll affect the nursing homes. It'll affect small businesses. It will affect everything. And the schools are just one piece of it. And that has been a legacy of the mining. And we have the opportunity to lead the way. So I appreciate supporting the unemployment. Of course, I would support unemployment. I'm speaking today for the heart of the range. I border that community, but we are all one North. We are the North. And we are proud to live there. And I grew up on a farm, and weather was cyclical. This is not a cyclical issue. This is an issue of bad decisions by legislators. The body sitting here, not doing their job. Not doing their job. That's it. It rests with us, and now is the time, and we aren't leaving this session without taking care of the range. And I move for the amendment, the DE one, to be adopted.
Okay.
Ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call is requested. There will be one. I'll note, members, this is a very important bill. We obviously had a lot of discussion yesterday as well. I'm going to go to Representative Mueller in just a second. We do have several other bills we're trying to get to, so I'll just ask folks to be pretty focused if they can. And maybe I'll note one. Well, I'll go to Representative Mueller and note something else. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be very brief for you. You know, we talk about process. Part of the process that we have as legislators is talking to one another. So my question for the author of the underlying bill is, how many conversations did you have with Representative Igo about having a bill that you felt was a better compromise?
Representative Johnson, pardon me.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I had the same number of conversations with Representative Igo that he had with me, which was zero. I took the language that he had in his original bill to make sure that at least this portion, taking care of the workers and extending it, went through.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. And, you know, again, when we're having these conversations with each other, you're seeing, we don't have to have conversations with each other when we chief author a bill. But if you're going to clone a bill, it would be probably a good courtesy as working relationships to say, hey, I see that you're doing this. I'm concerned about this or that. Let's go ahead and talk about this because we want to be able to work together for that. That's part of the process that we have as legislators. And so, you know, just like with Natalie said, of course we're going to support the UI. I think that's super important. But the process of keeping our personal relationships together as we as legislators have to collaborate together, it goes both ways. So we need to make sure that we're doing that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Chair Baker.
Thank you again. Again, I'm sorry to have this seeming to be real political. Again, I'm urging the author of the bill, Representative Johnson, to take this DE, lock arms with Representative Igo, and do the right thing. And you know what? We heard yesterday, what really bothers me yesterday is when the MPCA came up and says, we got to start over on this permitting. That should be an embarrassment to the Walz administration to say we have to start over when we've been talking about this for years. These folks have got to start making decisions, whether we give them unemployment or not. That's for another 6 months. Okay. They got to start making plans about then what? They got to start packing up. Are they going to move? What's their house going to be worth? If we don't do some legislation right now, it's going to take two strong bipartisan members to join this and fight for getting the permitting thing handled through the Article 1, Article 2, whatever's missing. Have you, my question, Mr. Chair, is to Rep. Johnson. Have you talked with Co-Chair Pete Johnson, Representative Fisher, in the environment to see if he's willing to kind of have a hearing on this, push this forward? Have you had any conversation with him?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Baker. I have talked to him about the permitting reform issue a number of times. The specific bill to address this. I believe it's 3050 was just introduced yesterday, so I've not had a chance to touch base with Rep. Fisher on that, but I plan to, just like I when I had the conversation with President King yesterday, I committed to him to try and start pushing on this a little bit to make sure that it doesn't make sure this continues to move forward.
Chair Baker.
And again, final, just again, this is where it takes a lot of leadership and strength to stand up and do the right thing. We heard yesterday they want a long-term plan. Your bill doesn't do that today. But taking the DE today, even though it still has more steps to go, take it with it. You're going to get a lot of support if we take this DE today, and then really join efforts with your delegation on the range. Let's push it forward. Let's make this one of the best bipartisan efforts of the whole session, is to help our Rangers. And this can be done with your leadership if you take this amendment today, and we urge you to do that. So I appreciate that. This is an important long-range plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I bring you to the amendment.
To the amendment. Thank you, Chair. I encourage a no vote on the amendment. I know that's disappointing to some folks. To your point of working together on this and this being a long-term issue, I feel like this is something we could have been working on in the interim. I feel like this is something we could have been working on for the whole session and not something that was tried to be shoehorned in at the last minute to tie it to unemployment extension. So with that, I'd urge a no vote.
And I'll ask Representative Zelizinikar, I'll go to you, but if you can keep your final comments brief, if you do want to say anything. As the author of the motion, that's traditional to let you do that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, and I guess I would just say something simple is the layoffs just happened. 600 layoffs happened a few weeks ago, and a ruling just happened too. And so this has been talked about, and it's like a task force for eternity, yeah, is what this is. And this is hurting Minnesota economy, and make no mistake, when mining goes, the state economy goes. And that should concern every Minnesotan, because everything we do is centered around a large portion of the economy that is in mining. And Minnesota has led the way in it. And the only roadblock that's happening for mining is happening right through this body. And so if it doesn't happen, then the reason is rests in the body here. And so we will make mining. We are going to keep fighting for mining in northern Minnesota because it's the right thing to do. And if you want to use devices, I think we all know that we are going to do it better. We have better rules and laws in the state of Minnesota, harder workers than anyone else does. And they're high-paying jobs, and we should have these jobs in Minnesota. And we should lead the way, and we will lead the way. One way or the other, we're going to lead the way.
I was asked to provide testimony or allow testimony on this about this, expressing environmental concerns. I actually have said no to that because this is the committee that focuses on the issues before our committee. And properly, if folks have concerns about the environmental provisions in Article 2, they need to be brought up in the Environment Committee, which is the whole point. So we will Representative Frazier, real quick, sir.
Yeah, very, very quick. Yeah. And I think I'm gonna vote no on this amendment. But the reason is, I've heard a lot about voices being here, and I thank the workers for being here, for your leadership with your folks and helping to take care of them. We're going to do that with the UI. But there has not been, there's not the voice of the tribes that are going to be impacted here. And that is one of the main reasons why this needs to go through the process, so those voices can be a part of this conversation.
Okay.
We cannot keep ignoring that.
There was, and I suspect folks are going to note Kathy Chavers testifying yesterday. Representative Schultz, you're going to say that? If we can just, I want to.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Schultz. All right, because we really do need to wrap this up, Representative Schultz.
Former Chair Kathy Chavers was the chairwoman of the Boys Fort Band for decades. In addition, she was the elected chair of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribes, all of them.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you. Representative Kozlowski, Representative Frazier. You're going to do it, Representative Frazier, very quick.
She testified and said she's not speaking on behalf of the tribe.
Okay. So, members, we're going to go to vote on this. I think we've all gotten to say various things and made important points. So I'm going to ask the clerk to please take the roll on the DE1 amendment.
Chair Pinto.
No.
Chair Baker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Greenman.
No.
Vice Chair Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Bakeberg.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Frazier.
No.
Representative Hussein.
No.
Representative Pete Johnson.
No.
Representative Wayne Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Kozlowski.
Gawain, no.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Representative Zelizinikar.
Zelizinikar, aye. And the dean.
There being seven ayes and seven nays, the motion fails. We are to the underlying bill as amended. I'd like to move to a vote on that. I'm thinking that members will be okay with that. Representative Johnson, quick final words on your bill to make sure that these UI benefits do in fact get extended. Representative Johnson.
I just thank you to the chair and members. Thank you to the folks that came down and advocated. Thank you to the people that reached out to encourage support on this particular issue. And to the members of the steel workers sitting up at the table here for their strong advocacy for their members on all these issues.
And Representative Johnson, thank you. And thank you for making this happen. Combining these things go through a path and cause Article 1 to be quite uncertain. I'm looking forward now to making sure that it does happen, and then Article 2 is considered in the proper committee. So with that, Representative Johnson renews his motion in the House file 3023. Had there been a roll call requested? There has been, yes. I think,
Mr. Chair, I'd request
it will make all right. So it sounds like multiple folks will request that, but I think Representative Greenman will note has a roll call. That's been that will now happen. So Representative Johnson renews the motion that House File 3023, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk, please take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Aye.
Chair Baker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Bakeberg.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Hussein.
Aye.
Representative Pete Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Wayne Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Kozlowski.
Yes.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Schultz.
Schultz aye.
Representative Zlesnikar.
There being 14 ayes and zero nays, the motion passes. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you so much to the gentleman who's testified several times, to the folks who've come here, and Representative Johnson, for your leadership. We'll look forward to getting this done. Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen, come on up. And Representative Greenman, if you wouldn't mind moving House File 2171 for re-referral to the General Register replacement.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. As you're aware, Chair Hansen and others, time is tight here. So, Chair Hansen, please present House File 2171.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I ask for your support for House File 2171. For those of you who are on the committee in the last term, we did pass this out unanimously out of the committee on a voice vote. A little history lesson. It relates to a child labor amendment that the Minnesota legislature ratified in 1933. So what the resolution does is it reaffirms that authority for that constitutional amendment and authorizing Congress to deal with child labor and recognizing state legislatures sharing that authority. So the resolution is very clear in front of you, and I would ask for your support, and I have one testifier.
Mr. Hess, welcome to you, and please, if you can identify yourself.
My name is Bernie Hess, United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1189. I want to thank Representative Hansen for bringing this forward. This is probably the best for last bill for today. This is a real bipartisan opportunity for you folks today. I just want to throw one thing at you. Child labor violations have fallen since the 2000s. But from 2015 to 2022, the number of minors employed in violation of child labor laws rose by 283%. This is a real thing going on. It goes on in Minnesota. We've had problems in meatpacking plants with the sanitation crews, food processing, and a number of other industries. So it's a real deal. We need to be very serious about this. We've got to be vigilant, and I would ask your support.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hess. Members, questions, discussions on House File 2171. Representative Schultz, looks like you have something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just move quickly. You know, my understanding is a court struck this down decades ago, and then this is more so for Mr. Hess. Since that point in time, we've put into place, is including in state law, numerous different policies to protect against that. So I think what you described is already against the law. And so I just wanted to kind of more so just note that for the record, Mr. Chair. Nobody wants, you know, child labor to be, you know, and so I just
got to note that, that there was this issue constitutionally up the food chain from us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any other member questions or discussion? I am not seeing any. And so Chair Hansen, moving to final comments on House File 2171.
I would just ask for your support. You know, often you don't get resolutions. You know, the resolutions are different than a statute. And I have generally sometimes voted against resolutions, but this one is verifying, ratifying what we've done before. I think it actually has more authority. So I would ask for your support.
And Chair Hansen, I'm confirming that that this would be sent to the General Register as opposed to, for example, be referred to the Rules Committee since it's a resolution. It looks like the former is correct. Okay. Not seeing anything further. So all in favor of Representative Greenman renews her motion that House File 2171 be recommended for placement on the General Register. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? And that motion passes. House File 2171 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then Representative Curran, we're going to have you come on up. Members, we're going to try to squeeze in these two bills. I know we're looking for a vote to vote out the Frazier bill. Representative Curran has been waiting for quite a while, and so we'll have them come up. So Representative Curran, Representative Greenman asks you to please move House File 1316 be recommended for placement on the General Register.
So moved, Mr. Chair, and I think there's an amendment.
And there's an amendment as well. Should we get your amendment, Representative Curran? Do you want that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I believe you have the A3 amendment. Is that correct?
I believe that we actually have an A2
Mr. Chair,
A3 is being passed out. Okay.
Great.
So the A3 amendment being moved by Representative Greenman. I'm just going to assume that that's happening. Representative Curran, if you could please just tell us, it seems like a technical amendment, the A3.
Essentially, yes, but the A3 reflects a lot of conversations between the DLI and other folks who've been working on this bill. There was previously in the original bill, there's a definition of independent contractors. It's too murky to go in there, and we don't really need to do that for what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. So
That's
the primary change.
Okay. Let's see if there's any questions or discussions about the motion. So all in favor of approval of the A3 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wishes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. The bill is amended. And then if you can very briefly explain your bill, and we'll have very brief testimony. So Representative Curran.
Thank you. I'll be really quick. This has to do with collecting child support and making sure that folks who earn their income through, like the bill says, independent contractors, not through traditional employment, that their wages are reported somehow to the state so that we can ensure kids are getting the right amount of child support. There's people being paid for their work, but that record is not reflected, and then the children suffer when they're not able to get that support. I'll turn it over to the testifier.
Okay, and please identify yourself and proceed with your, my apologies, very quick testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto and committee. My name is Trish Skolpammer. I serve as the director of the Child Support Services Division office. This bill is meant to strengthen the ability of the Child Support Services Program to collect child support and to set fair child support orders based on having a full picture of the income of the parents. As it stands now, all employers are required to be reported through a new hire reporting system, but there's a loophole where people who work as either independent contractors or in the gig economy do not need to be reported. It's optional but not required, and this bill would make that required and help us do our job better in child support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I'll note that there's a very helpful document handout that we have from the Ramsey County Attorney's Office explaining the bill. Anybody else in the public wish to testify? We'll do that first. Not seeing any, and then Chair Baker, to you, sir.
Just real quick again. Again, I like the idea of what we're doing here. I don't like getting handed an amendment at the last minute like this, and it's frustrating. Is there a reason why, Mr. Chair, we can't lay this over and work on this with our omnibus? I mean, again, I'm not opposed necessarily. I just want to know why is it needing to move out of this committee?
Good point, Mr. Chair. And actually, I'd been thinking that it was going to be laid over initially, but then it seemed like it was ready to go. So maybe Representative Greenman, you may have a comment to make. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would be amenable to that, too. I'll just note that the difference between the two amendments was that DLI was working on language to clarify it. There was a delete section that just got left off the A2. So the difference between the A2 and the A3, I believe, is just that language. That changes your opinion or not.
And I will say, Chair, we want to make sure we're very comfortable with anything leaving the committee. So in general, my feeling is if you've got some discomfort, that this is not something I don't think was a particular deadline. But Representative Curran, anything for you want to say about that?
I came to this committee fully expecting that whatever the committee recommended, that's how I would like to move forward.
Yeah, so Chair, I totally get your point. And
yes,
maybe,
Mr. Chair,
so why we just like to we'll plan to lay it over.
Make that motion to lay it over.
Yeah, yeah, we'll change it.
I want to go into it more, that's all.
No, that makes total sense. Okay, not seeing anything further then. So Representative Curran, as we're heading into discussing it later, I'll give you final word.
Yes, and I may have missed it. Did we adopt the A3 on this?
That was adopted, yes.
Sorry.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate the consideration. Again, totally fine laying it over. It's most important that we get the language right. I certainly don't want to pass anything that's problematic. So I appreciate the committee's consideration moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And with that, the chair lays over House File 1316 as amended. Representative Frazier, you got the last bill, sir. Folks, we're going just a few minutes over, as you'll see. And so Representative Frazier, as he heads up there, is moving House File 689. I believe the plan is that it be placed on the General Register. Representative Frazier, am I right about that? General Register for this? Okay. So Representative Frazier to House File 689. I don't see any amendments, so please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'll try to be quick, let my testifier speak. House File 689 addresses the widespread issue of wage theft in Minnesota, particularly in the construction industry, where one in five workers, and I like to emphasize, one in five workers experience unpaid wages or denied overtime. To combat that wage theft, 689 grants county attorneys the authority to issue administrative subpoenas, enabling them to access business records, related wages, and employment conditions. This empowers prosecutors to hold employers accountable and deter violations. This bill is supported by Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council, SEIU, Local 26, Carpenters, AFL-CIO, and Minnesota County Attorney Association. With that, I'll turn it over to the testifier.
Thank you so much, and sir, welcome, and please identify yourself. Proceed.
Chair Pinto, members of the committee, my name is Brian Walsh. I am an Associate Director of Civil Rights and the Director of Labor Standards Enforcement for the City of Minneapolis. Several years ago, not long after the legislature explicitly added wage theft to the criminal theft statute, I had the experience of trying to refer a case of wage theft to the county attorney's office. I found incredibly dedicated people without the necessary tools and evidence to prosecute the case. I learned that financial crimes and fraud investigators are stretched incredibly thin, always asked to do more with less. I also learned financial crimes and fraud often require more evidence to prove. The bill before you provides prosecutors the same administrative subpoena power they already have in other similar cases, allowing them to add capacity and more closely collaborate with law enforcement. All of this matters because, as Representative Frazier noted, wage theft puts downward pressure on wages across entire industries, puts honest employers at a competitive disadvantage.
And I'll probably need you to be wrapping up in the next couple seconds. I'm so sorry.
No problem. If an employer commits wage theft and payroll fraud, if an employee steals from an employer, we expect that case to be prosecuted. If an employer commits wage theft and payroll fraud, we should expect the same. The bill before give them one tool.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. My apologies. Anybody else want to testify extremely briefly? Not seeing anybody. Closing testimony. Chair Baker.
I have a lot of concerns about this bill as well. Again, I think part of it is I want to get you the bad folks. What I don't know is how much this is going to get our arms around some very aggressive prosecutors that have not got the same interest in mind with a good balanced approach to things. I have a lot of concern about this, and again, I'm asking that maybe we just hold this over, lay it over, have further discussion to it, because again, I don't think this bill should go on after this committee.
Representative Frazier, comments?
I don't see the need to lay this bill over. We've had this bill in two committees now, and you haven't seen any opposition to this bill with testimony. I'm not sure where the concerns are coming from.
Representative Frazier, can you say the committees that this bill has been in front of? Looks like Judiciary.
In this committee.
Oh, in this committee as well. I see. But in the Judiciary, you didn't hear those concerns.
There was no opposition to this bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask
Chair
a roll
Baker.
Call.
Okay, asking for a roll call then. Representative, somebody else have anything they want to say? All right. In that case, Representative Frazier, final words on your bill.
It's a good bill. It gives prosecutors the tool they need. We all should be actively and proactively in a manner trying to ensure that we don't have wage theft in this state. A vote against this bill saying you're okay with wage theft.
Okay.
Again, Mr. Chair, so Chair Baker. This. If we want to hold it over, I'll recall the roll call. We can hold this over in the bill if you want to do that. If the author wants to move it forward, then it's got to go to roll call.
Okay. So you're saying otherwise, laying over me? Yeah, there wouldn't be a vote. I guess. Okay, and so I guess in that case it would be either through our omnibus bill or next the budget bill next. One second, Representative Frazier, still want to proceed to a vote?
Oh, this bill is moving in the Senate. We will see it again. Take the vote.
Okay, wants to take the vote. There will be a roll call, Chair Baker. Clerk, please take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Aye.
Chair Baker.
No.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Yes.
Vice Chair Meckland.
No.
Representative Bakeberg.
No.
Representative Berg.
Yes.
Representative Frazier.
Yes.
Representative Hussein.
Yes.
Representative Pete Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Wayne Johnson.
No.
Representative Kozlowski.
Yes.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Schultz.
No.
Representative Zalesnikar.
And with 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not pass. And with that, that's the conclusion of our agenda. I'll just note members and members of the public will be coming back next week dealing with budget issues. Folks are aware of the significant constraints. The chair and I are working and certainly want to have folks be in touch with us. Chair Baker, anything else you want? I think we're good. Members, with that, we are adjourned.